As you can well imagine, a huge response coming through through Freedom of Speech. Thank you so much. Great corridor from Stephen and Zoe here. A bit of a worry if you can't debate a genuinely heartfelt issue in a university anymore. Another one here. Freedom of speech does protect the minority from the tyranny of the majority, but it's not only for the minority. The majority also need freedom of speech. This is how we test ideas. Abhorrent views, in my view, does need to be said so that they can be tested and challenged and then condemned. And someone sent in that quote by US philosopher Noam Chomsky: if we don't believe in freedom of expression for people we despise, we don't believe in it at all. All right, and on that, it is time for I've Been Thinking. Zoe George, take it away.
Well, I've been thinking about social fabric and social good, and two of my favourite things woven together. First, obviously, women's sport. Of course, it's me. I'm delighted to be co-hosting a table at the Women in Sport Aotearoa fundraiser next Saturday night in Palmerston North. Shout out to Palmy.
Good town.
In association with the Turkingtons. I'm one of many sports people who'll be there, including All Blacks and Olympic athletes. We've got Black Sticks and a whole range of administrators, and all the money goes back into supporting women and girls in sport. So head to the Women in Sport Aotearoa's website or social media, get a ticket or 10, and you may end up on my table, and you'll get to spend more than just an hour with me. And finally, Wallace, I don't know if you caught the newsroom interview with ACT art spokesperson.
Todd Stevens this way.
Oh my goodness, was that a read? And as someone who's involved in the arts and creative sector as a board director, I would like to extend an invitation to him, to Mr. Stevenson, to come and have a coffee with me at Bats Theatre here in Wellington, so that he can see the true reality of what's going on in the creative sector right now. We are facing a crisis, and my urge to the government is to please not cut funding to the arts. It's a must-have, not a nice-to-have.
He didn't say he was going to cut funding.
They are considering it, and it's a huge part of our social fabric, just as much as sports. So if he's listening, or if anyone in his team or office or party listening, maybe Stephen can help me track him down. That would be great. Give me a call.
Actually,
message the panel.
I want to put you talk often to MP caliber Stephen. What did you make of that article and the fact that here you have a Minister of the Arts who went to one musical once?
It was a good one. It was Hamilton, and it was in New York. It was great. But, you know, I mean, catch that bloody woman in a New Zealand musical, which is just genius.
Yes. What do you think of the calibre, Stephen? Would you not think he could have named a libretto, a piece of opera, a New Zealand book?
I was the ACT spokesman for arts.
Right.
And I feel...
What's your favourite New Zealand author?
I feel very sorry for him, because I'm always iconoclastic, and I always wanted to be sort of put the case out there for, let's call it, ordinary New Zealanders. And an awful lot of the artistic people, part of the problem I would think, I don't know whether he felt that or not, but I used to find that the artistic people were infinitely sanctimonious toward me. They assumed I knew nothing about culture. They assumed I was a barbarian. And they were They stated their entitlement to support as if it was so much more worthy than all the people who liked perhaps sport, or who liked popular music, or who liked country music in those days. Everyone pretended to despise it if you're from the arts community. That's changed. So I don't know whether any of this has affected him, but I sort of thought, if it had been me in the same situation, I'd have been awfully tempted to stick it up your nose.
What do you say to that?
In every section and different group of our society, there's always going to be people like that.
Mm.
But honestly, arts and culture enrich our lives just like sport. It enriches our lives. And sport and art and culture should be, but are not currently on the same level. Imagine life without New Zealand Music Month.
Well, that's what I mean. For most people, probably they could easily imagine it, because
Or local television. How about radio? Because, we wouldn't exist.
Well, if we look at what's happening, where people are voluntarily able to go, they're actually not supporting these things. And that is an issue for politicians. Do I keep supporting the ballet and the opera because, you know, the elite think that the state ought to keep funding them?
So Tamatatini, here's a fun fact. Last year, Tamatatini got more funding than ever before. It is not only an art, but it's also a sport. And I was so pleased to see them get millions and millions of dollars. It's changing. We need to think about art, not just about ballet and opera and orchestra. It's not just that, it's more than that.
Well, did you enjoy the portfolio, Stephen?
Well, I mean, I've always been keen on theatre. I'm a bit of a musical pig, so I go to the
favourite New Zealand
stuff,
band.
But I don't have any. They're not passions for me. Nothing like reading or sport. So when I say enjoy, no, it was a job. And writing the art policy was a real pain because I knew it didn't matter what we said, they hated us anyway. So it was sort of. It was tribal. They considered themselves obliged to hate us. So no, it was a really frustrating.
Could you have turned that around? Because it doesn't have to be. You can be act. You can be libertarian. I'm thinking of actually some. I'm thinking of the great arts farm, the sculpture farm. You know, founded by Alan Gibbs.
Alan
here.
Gibbs. Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can't get a better funder and practitioner of the arts. And here we have a person who has next to nothing. All he needed to do was pick up the phone and talk to Alan or Dame Jenny Gibbs and ask about art, which is so rich in the society.
Well, I think Stephen. Alan and Jenny might well have said the officially sponsored art is terrible. let them appeal to people who are putting their own money into it. I don't know. I mean, it's a big topic, and as I said, I felt sorry for him because
art
I didn't think
also,
he could win.
Art is also really great for our mental health and well-being and community connection.
Those are just claims.
No, it's true.
Sport and activity are far more important.
What would you say to that, Zoe?
Art is an activity.
Stuff that gets you sweating.
Have you ever done a musical theatre show? My goodness, that gets you sweating. Holy crap, being on stage.
I'm talking about the audience. They're just sitting there watching.
Oh, gosh. No, your audience participation is important too. I don't know. I'm sorry. Arts and sport, social fabric, they interweave each other. They need to be equally supported. And I invite the new ACT spokesperson for art to come have a coffee.
I'll encourage him.
Okay, please. Thank you
very
so much,
good.
Stephen.
Very good. Courtesy of both Stephen Franks and Zoe George there. Going to this, well, between the axing of News Hub to the redundancies at TVNZ, 2024 has been a rocky year for our media industry, to say the least. But this latest one doesn't come from a major national newsroom, but that small community paper that could. It was announced yesterday that the Wairoa Star newspaper would be shutting down. 102 years, can you believe it? This follows the recent closures of the Hauraki Herald and the Kapiti Observer. The Wairoa Star was a twice-weekly local paper and, as I said, it's been around for over a century. With us is Ōtaki Today's editor, Ian Carson. Ian, good to have you here. What was your reaction to this? It can't have been a total surprise.
No, not a total surprise, but I guess we in the newspaper industry, we never like to see anybody go, and small community newspapers are struggling along with everyone else. So, yes, no surprise, but a sad case anyway.
Has it been tough for historical local newspapers to survive into the digital era?
Yes, it has. Obviously, the digital era has come upon us all, and it's been tough. We've had also, along with the major newspapers, I guess the added cost of newsprint, which is not produced in New Zealand anymore, so that all has to come from overseas, and also our distribution costs, where we have our letterbox distributors that. Need to be paid reasonably, and those costs have gone up, especially if you're using the national suppliers of that service. It's been pretty tough.
I guess why I got you on, Ian, is before I go to the panelists, is because As I said with Jesse Mulligan earlier today, I'm quite a fan of, you know, picking up your local rag, getting a nice spot in the sun, having a cup of tea, getting a scone out with a bit of butter and jam, and actually going through your local stuff, whether it be your local road widening, your rates, Bob's gnome collection down the road there. I really do quite like the mix of community stories. Is that reflected in your listeners?
Absolutely, although we don't have many listeners, I think they're more readers.
But sorry.
nobody listens to me anyway, Wallace. Look, it's absolutely true for a community newspaper. You've got to reflect your community. I've worked, back in my day, I was at the Evening Post in Wellington, and it's a very different beast having a community newspaper.
Right.
People react differently to certain things. They're more precious about local stuff, of course, but in the days of the 80s and 90s when I was at the Post, we covered things like the Eastbourne Borough Council meetings and things like that. And here in Otaki, we're really the only town in the area that has a local newspaper. So, I go to the community board meetings and I cover those, and we have the local fire brigade who's always up to something, and so on. So people love that sort of stuff. We've got somebody who's going on a bike ride for 11,000 kilometres from China to Athens. So it's that sort of stuff, as you say, sitting in the sun with a local newspaper and just browsing through it, rather than the digital stuff that you can have any time.
Yeah, well, I'm a fan. I still pick up the Western Letter. I go to the letterbox when I go home. Oh, is it there, Wednesday night? what about you, Stephen? Are you a fan still of the hard copy?
When I'm away somewhere, I pick up the local one. I enjoy even reading the ads, just seeing what kind of services are being offered.
I go through
it in detail, and to me, I don't have any solutions, but it's a sad loss. My sister Alison's Wellington magazine, Capital, closed this year, and it's just too hard to keep it going without the levels of competition for advertising and the rest of it.
But see, that's interesting, Stephen, because that was one magazine when I did go to Wellington Weekly, I used to pick up. I loved it.
I think she did a great job. But I think talking about Otaki, you've probably all seen Ricky Gervais' Afterlife. I love the newsroom.
It's true to life, I tell you what.
And I just think so sad. I think part of the low quality of candidates for local council elections these days is because an absence of coverage has meant you can get away with being an idiot, and it doesn't rank. Again, we can vote more tribally when we don't have information about how our nominees are actually working, and we just have lost that. But I don't have a solution to replace it.
I'll come to you, Zoe, but Ian, as a response.
Absolutely, Stephen's absolutely right. I'm not that popular locally with some of our local representatives because I do shine that light on when they do dumb things. And there's not many places probably around the world, really, let alone New Zealand, where there's good local coverage that keeps our elected members and anybody else in authority honest about things, because if you don't have somebody watching out for that sort of thing, that they can kind of do what they like, and nobody's going to know about it.
Yeah. So, Zoe.
All power to you, Ian.
I agree. I mean, for me, I was really, really sad to see the Kapiti Observer close down in April. It held a very special place in my heart. From the age of 11, I used to deliver it. And then when I was 15, 16, my first story appeared on the front page of the Kapiti Observer, and it allowed me to build my portfolio to then go into journalism school and then become a fully-fledged journalist. And if it wasn't for papers like that, then I wouldn't have had the opportunities that I did. And so this not only affects our communities, because these are a lifeline for our communities, it also affects the kids who are doing the paper round, or the teenagers that helped fund, you know, buy me a cricket bat, you know, all the important things, and pay for my art stuff, you know. but it was, and it gave me a foot into journalism. And so I'm really sad. But you're so right. Our role as journalists is to hold power to account and shine, you know, put things into the spotlight.
Stephen? Yeah, I just I don't like sort of carrying on unless there's a solution, and I just cannot think of a solution.
Yeah,
but that I was a paper. I had a paper round.
Did you?
Yeah, and that Kathy, my wife, came to Wellington from the Ashburton Guardian before she went to the press gallery. So that it's this progression is really at the heart of my family's experience.
It's so hard, but I mean, I love a good newspaper. I love the feel of a newspaper.
Yes.
I love the smell of a newspaper.
I think there's nothing like a hotel breakfast over the newspaper.
Yeah. You got it. Oh, a round of I can feel it, Ian. You've got three fans here, Ian. There's words of hope.
Yeah,
maybe that could be a radio ad, not on this station, but there's nothing like the smell of good newspaper or the breakfast and some juice.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. I'm interested in the point also. I had a journalist trainee or a student from Massey interview me a couple of weeks ago, and she really didn't know where she was going to go after she'd finished her training. And with the demise of a lot of these community newspapers, it's that extra training ground once they've done their student work that is disappearing as well. I'd love to take somebody on, but I simply can't afford it. And one of our features of success, I guess, is that we're really lean. We essentially put it out with myself and my wife and some contributors.
Mm.
So it's not necessarily a solution for the Wairoa Stars and other papers, who need a few staff.
Yeah, it's so tough. I tell you what, and being a young journo in newspapers, I started out in radio, in regional radio at Coromandel FM. Shout out to Thames. And that was a great area for me to grow my skills. And this is where you become, where you cut your teeth as a journo in places like this, places like the Kapiti Observer and your newspaper and at that radio station. And these places are disappearing, and it breaks my heart.
Well, good to have you on, Ian. Thank you. That's Ōtaki Today editor Ian Carson, all the very best. I realised, Stephen, we didn't have your I've Been Thinking, so do you want to tuck it in here?
Well, it's you got time.
Have we got time, Stephen?
I might run you out.
Well,
you've got 7 minutes.
I'll go straight to the pitch, and it's prompted by actually the topics for today, where in both cases, the Julianne Genta story and the university story, people were kind of paralysed by the other side of the word safety. I mean, sure, you throw jargon words around like inappropriate and so forth, but essentially, it's saying that there's something. That safety is a transcendent value that everything else folds in front of, and it sort of makes people stricken, as if the bone's been pointed at them, and they're not allowed to laugh in case they look uncaring, and they're not allowed to scoff. It's all seen as terribly earnest, and courage is kind of always treated as toxic unless it's on the sports field. So I'm saying, what is a big symbolic way of punching all those nannies, the cone people in the nose, the people who want to rule everything in the name of safety? And I'd love to see the government restore dignity and agency to one big group. It's the self-employed who are pestered by health and safety for making decisions that can only affect them. They are working on their own. They should be able to decide whether they put a helmet on or whether they have scaffolding up or not. Just as they can ride to their motorcycle to work, which is probably more dangerous than anything they're going to do at work. They can watch a 75-year-old householder trying to paint his house without scaffolding because it's become too expensive for them to offer to do the job, because they're going to have to spend as much on scaffold as the job. We've just been doomed by a whole lot of nannying on the level of risk that individuals can take. I'll understand it if you're putting someone else at risk. So my pitch will be, I'll put it to the deregulatory people, let's set free hundreds of thousands of self-employed with a defence to health and safety prosecution that is, I can make my own choices as long as I didn't put someone else at risk.
Interesting. So an ode to the self-employed, and you may well be listening to that with pricked up ears, Zoe, thinking, okay, I want to start up a small business.
Well, as of today, I am self-employed, so great, yeah. Is it risk to my health and safety being on the panel with Stephen? I don't know, it could be.
Well, I will say, Zoe, that the times we have, for example, Verity Johnson, who is a small business owner here, has a business, she does say, I mean, she hasn't said anything to, like what Stephen's saying there, but she does say that there are a number of hoops that one does jump through as a small business owner, and they are long.
It's tough. It's really
I'm told it's
tough.
One of the reasons why contracting, why roads and everything are so expensive is that there's now only two or three big contractors, because the cost of the health and safety compliance actually crucify anyone who doesn't have an enormous volume of work to justify all that specialist nannying. And New Zealand's paying a huge price for this.
All right, see what our listeners think, and you've really sort of responded to the panellists this evening. I'll tell you, Stephen, I do appreciate, for example, everyone has different interests and the arts aren't everyone's cup of tea, but to write them off as elite or irrelevant or unimportant is unhelpful and it's just untrue. It shouldn't be one or the other, sports or arts. Society without art in its many different forms would be a soulless society for me and many others. Not quite sure if you said it was elite, but nonetheless, I really appreciate your responses on that. It's 6:56 right here on the panel. And finally, on the program, well, I thought we'd sort of drop this and got a bit of response on this. Our question of the day is, are you a jaywalker? Do you get sick to death of jaywalkers? I saw a social media post that said Wellington has way more jaywalkers than Auckland. Now, jaywalking is still a crime in New Zealand, punishable with a $35 fine. And some of your responses here. In Newmarket, Auckland, jaywalking gets worse every year. AT puts in more lights for more crossings and they are again ignored. Better now to divert through adjacent narrow suburban streets than to try to drive through Newmarket. Simon says the so-called crime of jaywalking was invented by the auto industry as a way of blaming victims, pedestrians, for their failure of car drivers to take sufficient care around more vulnerable road users. Another one here. Your jaywalking is a New Zealand habit. I was quickly shown it wasn't acceptable in Australia. When on my first day in Australia, I took off from the back corner, then found an armed policeman pointing at me and saying, "Get back, get back." So I don't know. I'm actually, I don't know what they're like in Wellington, Zoe, but I do jaywalk quite a lot in Auckland. In fact, I get quite, shouldn't say this, but I do get quite impatient by lights.
Yeah. I mean, it happens. You see it all the time in Wellington. And I mean, who's not guilty of it in Wellington? I must admit, though, that when I travel, I don't jaywalk because I don't know the roads and I don't know, you know, yes, you look both ways, but I would rather just stand at a crossing and wait. But it's everywhere. Was it $35 fine?
Yes.
Yeah. Can we just get it overturned? But saying that, what's the investment to go through legislation to get that law overturned? It's just not going to be worth it.
I'll speak in favour of the law.
Okay.
Because it's one of the few things that can give you a daily sense of joy and liberation of sticking the finger up. and if they got rid of the law, there'd be no risk in it.
Yeah, true.
But also, I think Canada's a warning, where the law is clearly that the driver is always wrong. Mm. And it's bloody awful driving in some parts of Canada because people just step out on the road and you've got to sit there while they saunter across, and it's very inefficient in even in energy terms. So I'm in favour of pretty much the status quo. It should be illegal. I know that at some stage I should be dinged for it. I'm glad the law is there, and I'm also glad to break it.
So you do jaywalk, Stephen?
Oh, you can't live in Wellington.
Yeah, it's sort of rite of passage.
You'd be pathetic if you didn't.
So, yeah, interesting. Lots to say on that. But anyway, hey, you have been both fantastic. Really enjoyable panel this afternoon. Kia ora to you both. That's Zoe George, Stephen Franks. Have a great night. I'm Wallace Chapman with you till 8 p.m. Big thanks to my producer, Sam Hollis. See you tomorrow for Power Ballad Friday.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.